Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm going to have a fun time speaking on the phone with children's book author Lee Edward Foti. His most recent book is titled Kendra, Candlestar, and the Crack of Gazaw. He received first place in the Reader Views Literary Awards program in the Young Reader category, which is ages 8 to 12. Also with me, and I'm just really delighted, is 9-year-old Sophia McElroy. She actually read the book and wrote this wonderful review of it. It's obvious she loved the book and, in fact, commented, and I quote, "My favorite author and illustrator is Lee Edward Foti." Now, isn't that sweet? But before we go ahead and talk to Lee, I'd like you to know just a little bit about him. Growing up on the farm, Lee Edward Foti was subjected to various horrible chores such as cleaning up after chickens, pigs, geese, and younger siblings. He continually craved adventure and often found himself searching between the cracks of here and there in hopes of discovering an enchanted world populated with magical monsters, talking animals, and other creatures of the fairy. Several years later, he had stroke of good fortune to stumble upon the secret land of Anne, and now he is most pleased to be the official scribe of the Chronicles of Kendra Candlestar. When he's not chronicling, Mr. Wiz, as he is often so called, spends his time teaching kids how to daydream. Wow. And this is down through his fun-filled creative writing workshops. You know, isn't it great that there is somebody that actually has a passion to teach kids to daydream? I'm just so impressed. Lee enjoys traveling and especially exploring castles, mazes, tombs, temples around the world, not to mention those tiny little places hidden between the cracks of here and there. Now, just by listening to that, you can just imagine what type of a writer he is and why his books are so popular. Hi, Lee.
Hello.
Great to have you back online. You're a real prolific author, so I'm glad that we get a chance to talk to you again. Hi, Sophia.
Hello.
Sophia, it's just such a pleasure to have you with me, too, and helping me to talk to Lee. First of all, Lee, congratulations on your win.
Oh, thank you very much. It's splendulous.
I was really excited when I saw that your book actually did win, so this is fun. Now, Lee, before we go any further, would you just explain to our listening audience, give us maybe a brief outline on what this book is really about?
Sure. I mean, one of the wonderful things for me in winning this award is that this is a fourth book in a series. So in my mind, one of the challenges I've always had is making each book in the series fresh and original and not just trotting out the same old characters and same old problems. So I'm really, first of all, I just want to say I'm really proud of the fact that this book could achieve this award. And it's the fourth book in the series, and in this book, what I really wanted to do was take those fans of Kendra Candlestar on a different sort of magical journey where we get to really poke into all the little cracks and corners of the world called Teen. And I wanted to do it in a different way. I wanted to show a lot of the past of the land of Een, and I wanted to give a glimpse of the future. And I wanted to do that not by just showing flashbacks or anything like that. I wanted to actually have my character, Kendra Candlestar, go and live those moments. So in essence, this really is a time travel book, and it's about connecting Kendra's relationship with her family and with her people and with her own inner self.
Wow. So not only is there magic and fun, but also there's some self-reflection onto that, too.
Yeah, I think that's a natural part of any character or a real person when they're going to explore the past of their family.
Do you write any other types of stories?
Well, I write mostly fantasy adventure stories. I love to create and visit worlds that we wouldn't find in the real world. I have ideas for other stories that aren't quite as magical, but I haven't written them yet or published them yet. Down the road, I think, when I finish Kendra Candlestar, I may be exploring some of those different types of stories. But I do think I'll always be generally writing fantasy.
Oh, okay. What is your favorite type of story, which you probably already answered?
What is my favorite type of story to read or to write?
To write.
Oh, to write? Excuse me. Definitely Well, you know what, Sophia, I did say I love fantasy writing, and that is definitely true, but I love to write any story that's got a good, strong, central character, and I always like to think that, you know, as an author, my job isn't to look after my characters. I always think of my characters as a bit of my, you know, my characters are my enemies. I'm not supposed to look after them. I'm supposed to throw all sorts of problems at them. So you don't need a fantasy book to do that. You can do that almost in any story, but I do like to think that that is my job, is to try and torture my characters and make their lives as difficult as possible.
So I just want to kind of ask you something at this time, too. It seems to me that also you had said, Shelby, at one point that you can't write without drawing. And so just tell us a little bit about that.
That is completely true, actually, and it just happened yesterday. I'm working on the fifth and final Kendra Kenelstar book, and I came to a scene where I needed a character. Not a really important character, but important enough, and I was having trouble writing the little introductory scene, so I just stopped, which is what I always do when I run into that problem, took out my sketchbook, and I did a quick sketch of him, and actually, you can see it on my blog. You can I just posted it that day, and it's just a little mole-like character, and as soon as I drew him, I knew exactly how he kind of spoke, his speech pattern, how he moved. He came alive for me. So I don't know what that says about me as a writer, but definitely when I draw, my ideas start to flow out. So I'm a really big believer in the power of doodling and sketching. So, of course, not everyone is an illustrator in the same sense that I am, but I think you don't have to be when it comes to brainstorming. You just need to be able to sketch and doodle, and I think it's a really powerful way to unlock any blocks you might have. So I don't really believe in getting writer's block because as soon as I do, I just start to draw.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you like to draw, Sophia?
Yeah.
Cool. See, so do you write stories then? Does the drawing help write your stories?
I was about to write a book, but I don't think that it was that good, but I think I might try a little harder next time.
Sophia, you should see my very first book I wrote. It is not very good at all. So you don't need to worry about that. The more you write, the better you get.
Is it sometimes hard to come up with what happens next?
Yes, it's very hard to come up with what happens next. And there's two reasons for that, because sometimes I have so many ideas, I have to choose which one of them I'm going to follow. So I might have a really good idea for an adventure for Kendra Kenelstar, but I realize that it's not the right time or the right place for that to happen within the story, so I have to do something else. And then I have to kind of wave goodbye to that idea. So that's one problem, is having too many ideas. And then there's other problems I have sometimes where I know I want the story to go in a certain direction, and it's hard to kind of make my characters do what I want them to do sometimes, because I tend to think they have minds of their own and they just don't behave properly.
I just want to say something, Lee, and Sophia had mentioned that you wrote your first book and it wasn't very good, but maybe you should also tell us how old you were when you wrote that first book.
Oh, I was like, I think I was 6 or 7. It was called The Farm 7720. I have no idea what that means. yeah, I've got a little, I still have it. It's very delicate. It's tied together with, I'm 1,000 years old, so this is long before the time of computers, but it's an actual little book tied together with thread and drawn with crayon. It's very floppy. And I've shown it sometimes to some of my students, because I teach creative writing, and we've argued over what the various drawings are of. Those are farm animals, but we have many long debates over whether this is a chicken or this is a sheep or all those sorts of things. So, but it's a good proof, right, that my drawing has improved, and hopefully so is my writing.
That's a great story. And what's really great about it is that you have discussions as to what those animals are. Now, you, as the artist of those animals, could get very offended if the students that you teach are not right on.
Well, not really, because, you know, I think it's kind of one of those books I forgot existed until I, you know, until we had an archaeological dig at my parents' house. And so I can't really remember doing this book. So I have no, I just don't have that big of a, you know, connection to it. Sometimes when I look at a project that I've done, it's hard for me sometimes to separate my emotions from how I felt working on the project. So if I was frustrated while I was writing it, it takes me a long time to kind of detach from that story and then see it in a different light, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that with the Farm 7720. I just look at it with amusement.
What age did you start writing books at?
Oh, right. Well, you know what? That's the first book I have a record of. I think I was about 6, the Farm 7720. Now, I may have written something before then, but I just don't have any memory of it, and I don't have any copy of it. So definitely I know I was at least 6 years old, but I think I was always interested in writing and drawing. As far as my mom told me, she said as soon as I could pick up a crayon, I was drawing pictures and everything. I was always trying to tell stories with crayons and paper.
So was there a point, Lee, or do you want us to call you Mr. Wiz?
No, you can call me.
Okay.
But, you know, it's really hard when you, for me, traveling, I do a lot of travel in Asia and
mm-hmm.
whatnot. It's really hard when your first name is Lee and it's also the most popular last name in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Wiz, my nickname, evolved with kind of because of that reason, because a lot of people were really confused by this strange person from Canada who has a last name for a first name.
Yeah. I can well imagine. Lee, was there a point in your life that you didn't write, you know, or illustrate? I mean, was there, I'm thinking when you were a teen, and I'm thinking like some teens just would look at that and is like, no way am I going to write, and yet others do. So I'm wondering what happened to you with that teen stage.
Yeah,
or older.
An interesting question. I think I've always had a little bit of an up and down relationship with writing and illustrating, and by that I mean sometimes I thought I only ever wanted to draw pictures, other times I only ever wanted to write. It was very difficult for me being a teen and having a really strong interest in children's literature.
Mm-hmm.
My sister is 12 years younger than me, so that gave me a bit of an excuse to write stories. I could always say I was writing them for her if I was worried about looking cool, sort of thing. When I got into university, I got a little bit older, and I studied English literature. I became really interested in experimenting with writing and kind of writing, literary stuff. But, you know, I soon realized that my true passion was the world of children's literature. It's a little hard when you're a 15-year-old guy, right,
mm-hmm.
to have that love. And so I don't know if I exactly hit it, but I don't even know if I actually nurtured it within myself either. It wasn't until I kind of reached my mid-20s that I started to just kind of embrace it again and fully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and that's very understandable, because there is a point in our lives where we're just, you know, one foot in one side, we're 6 years old, and the next foot we're maybe 20 years old, and there's that vacillating for a few years, not sure where we really stand when we're in our teenage years, so...
But those are valuable years to explore different things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret at all trying my hand at different styles of writing. I mean, I always did write and or draw, so I never turned off those passions completely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that would be impossible for me, to be quite honest. But I'm not sure I nurtured them in the right way either. But it's valuable to explore different interests. And when you're a teenager and in your early 20s, I think that's the time to do it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And speaking of the earlier years, you were an entrepreneur at a very young age. Tell us all about that. You buy your Star Wars figures.
Oh, right. I grew up when I was, I grew up on a farm. So, you know, lots of hard work. My writing talents wasn't always applicable to growing up in a farm. But I had this grand idea, so I loved Star Wars I still love Star Wars, but I'm old enough that I was alive when the very first Star Wars movie came out, and of course I absolutely loved it. I wanted to get all of the action figures, so I came up with this grand scheme to raise money so I could buy the whole collection, and I convinced my younger brother that we should go into the chicken business. So looking around my environment where I lived, you know, we lived out in the country, so a lemonade stand wasn't really going to cut it. So we pooled all of our money, and I think between the two of us, we came up with $100. And that's quite a bit, yeah, but we could buy, because we working on the farm, we could earn some money from chores and things. So we pooled our money, and we bought, with $100, I think that was enough to buy 100 little baby chicks.
Wow.
And a bag of food. And growing up on the farm, we already had, you know, a chicken coop, like someplace where we could keep these things, so we didn't have to build stuff. And, yeah, we went into the chicken business. Now, I don't know if you know this part of the story, but it failed miserably. One of the things that chickens are really good at is dying. And unfortunately, they caught some sort of terrible virus, and when we would come home every day. This was when the chickens got a little bit older. They were almost near the point where they could be laying eggs, and so this was where the money was going to kick in because we thought we could sell the eggs. And my mom used to sell eggs just kind of from the front door. People in the neighborhood would come and buy them, so we thought, I could just see the money, you know, the stacks of money in my imagination. No, every day I came home, and there was another dead chicken, and it was a very miserable failed venture. So it turned. I think that was a good turning point for me. I decided I would turn to writing. There's not as much depth in writing, and if there is, it's imaginary.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Lee Edward Bodie, author of Kendra Kendall's Star in the Crag of Kazaa. Helping me is 9-year-old Sophia McElroy. And hey, as you've heard so far, this has been just a fun chat. And it's always wonderful to have children ask these very important questions. So please stay tuned because there's just so much more. So what's your relationship with eggs?
I hate them. That was my job every morning. We had, despite my failed chicken venture, normally on the farm, we always had chickens. We normally had, say, you know, anywhere from, you know, 50 to 100 chickens. So it was my job every morning. Here I was wanting to be this great writer and illustrator. When I was 11, this was my dream, right? But every morning before breakfast, before school, I had to go collect eggs, feed the chickens. We always had one big vicious rooster who thought the eggs were his. So I always had to kind of have this epic battle every morning with this rooster. Collect all these eggs, take them inside, wash them. And I just, you know, I actually absolutely hate eggs. This is a very famous fact about me. I find them disgusting. So I will not eat an egg for the life of me. But, Sophia, as you know, in my books, there can be quite a few eggs, especially in this last book, the fourth book. There's a character I was kind of inspired by my life, and so I created a villain who's kind of like this giant chicken-like monster, and she lays hundreds of eggs at a time. So I thought I would draw on that kind of childhood trauma and just release it into the world of Kendra Kendall's Star.
And did it help to release?
I still hate eggs. But for those people who know me and for a lot of my students and former students, I think it gives them an extra layer of amusement to read this book where Kendra Kendall Star encounters all of these eggs. I had actually introduced this kind of scene, this horrific, or as I like to call it, eggorific scene of this giant hatchery in my third Kendra book. And it was a marvelous kind of set piece in my imagination, but because of the direction of the story, Kendra had to leave that place. So in the fourth book, I made sure she got back into that hatchery and just at the moment when all the eggs started hatching.
Well, at least you still have a good relationship with eggs in writing.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right.
Well, I teach, you know, it's also kind of funny because one of the classes I teach is called Magical Eggs, and that amuses my students as well, and we design our own eggs, and we actually even construct or design our own eggs and build models of them. So my students are always rather amused when I introduce this whole topic of eggs to them.
Oh, that is so good. And tell us more about your teaching. You mentioned several times that you teach, and I understand it's not only in Canada where you live, but you do a lot of traveling too.
Yeah, most published authors in the children's market, we get to do a lot of speaking to kids. And, you know, I used to be really shy when I was younger, quite the introvert. And once I was published, I realized I had to get out there a little bit more, and I was asked to go speak at schools. And I was terrified the first time I went to school, and then quickly realized I really loved it. And a few years ago, well, more than a few now, I guess about 8 years ago, I was asked to start a program for an extracurricular program, creative writing for kids. And so kind of ignorance is bliss. I'd never really taught formally before, so I started developing curriculums, and I started thinking to myself, you know, what would I have wanted to do when I was 11 rather than collecting eggs? Like, what kind of program would I have liked? So basically that was my inspiration. And here we are 8 years later. We have quite a few teachers who teach in I live in Vancouver, so we have in the greater Vancouver area, we have quite a few teachers running this program, and it does allow me to travel a little bit as well. And it's just really a place where we nurture the creativity of children, try to give them lots of inspiration, and help them write, illustrate, and desktop publish their books. And I'm a really firm believer that writing isn't just about writing. It's about being creative. So, you know, I might spend a few hours a day building something or, you know, I mean, I draw and a lot of my illustrations make it into my books, but I also do stuff that no one ever sees, like building little strange props or just things to help me figure out and keep me inspired along the way. And this is what I bring to my students as well. Yes, Sophia, I'd like to thank you for your review that you gave Kendra Kettlestar. I'm very pleased with it. It made me laugh. And I see that your favorite character was Oki. Is that true?
Yeah, I just think he's, like, really cute and stuff.
He seems, I have to tell you, Sophia, he seems to be a very popular character with kids. What I was curious to know, did you like all of his silly words that he was using in the book?
Yes.
Do you have a favorite silly word? Can you remember any of them?
I have the book right here. I can maybe find some or something.
It's okay. I was just wondering if there was one that jumped out at you. So it was one of my, oh, I don't know. I have a lot of fun writing with Oki, so I put a lot of work into giving him a good dictionary of silly words.
Lee, do you become the character when you're writing?
It depends. Sometimes. I don't know if I ever become Oki, but definitely I have a character called Trugol the Younger, and he's a troll-like character, very monstrous, and I sometimes feel like when I'm working on that character or a scene with that character that my movements become a lot more lumbering and I sometimes speak like him.
Mm-hmm.
So I really have a lot of fun with him. Oki, I don't know. Oki's pretty natural. I think the reason why, I don't know, Sophia, maybe this is why you like him so much as well, but I feel that he's such a great kid character. He's very, you know, he gets a little bit scared. He gets silly. He does all of the things that a normal kid would do, right? He's basically how I was when I was 11. And I kind of tend to think that's why he must be so popular.
Because the kids can relate to him.
Right, because that's my suspicion anyway. I think he is by far the most popular character. He, you know, I'm very fortunate. I do get quite a bit of correspondence from my readers, and Oki is definitely the favorite character. Kendra is second. I mean, she's not too far behind, but Oki is definitely number one. And I just think maybe it's because he is a mouse, so he's a little cute, but I also think it's just because he has that sort of kid-like quality about him.
Okay, so I have this question, and it just amazes me how, I guess it's creative imagination or something, but, I mean, how did you come up with a mouse, and how did you come up with the name Oki? Why couldn't it be a lizard or
for these questions? You know, I put actually tons and tons of work into names. I mean, I'm sitting here in my studio and I'm surrounded by sketchbooks and scraps of paper and there's names written over some of them and sometimes pages and pages of names. Oki came about quite easily. He was always a mouse. He's one of the only characters in this book, going back to the very first book, Kendra Kettlestar and the Box of Whispers, when these characters first were introduced. He was one of the few characters who didn't go through a real metamorphosis and change.
Mm-hmm.
Kendra, for example, used to be a rabbit, so she really changed. But Oki was always a mouse, and to be honest, I just thought the name Oki, I came up with it fairly quickly, and I just felt that it was small, just like him, and a little bit cute, and just short and sweet, and it just seemed to fit him. I normally don't come up with names that easily for characters. I don't pick the first name that occurs to me. I put a lot of effort into it. But for him, it seemed to come quite easily.
Hmm. Sophia, does this give you an inspiration to maybe get back to writing?
Yeah.
I hope so.
What were you writing when you were writing a while back and then just kind of didn't think it was good? What were you writing about?
About this poor cat that lives on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? You know, one of my ideas for a story that I want to write, I've actually started doing some sketches for it, is a story about cats. And it's about cats that, it's about these, I wouldn't call them wild, I guess they're alley cats. And it's about how they, their adventures and what's going to happen to them. So it's kind of interesting.
Did you at one time have a cat as a pet?
I have a cat right now.
Oh, yeah.
I've always had cats growing up on the farm, but I do have a cat right now. He wasn't the inspiration for this story.
Okay.
Our capital of Canada is in a place called Ottawa, and I'd never been there till 2 years ago, and I went on this tour of our parliamentary buildings. It's like our White House, and there's this strange place at the back of it where these cats live, and they're called the Parliamentary Cats, and they just hang out in this little cat hotel. And they actually built this place for these cats, and no one owns them, and they just hang out there. And when I saw them, I couldn't believe that no one had written a book about these cats. So my inspiration for the story that I hope to one day write is about how they came to be the Parliamentary Cats.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting. It's interesting, and obviously they just kept rebreeding themselves, and rather than get rid of them, they just are looking after them, and obviously they're being fed. And
No one owns them, but vets come in and give them their inoculations, and they are fed. And I mean, I will tell you, I think my cat would love it there, because he loves hanging out with other cats, and they get lots of attention, because people are always wandering by, and I think originally they were cats that were purposely brought to the Parliament buildings to keep down the mice.
The mice, yeah. They were mostly,
sure. But after a while, they probably moved on to different technology to get rid of mice, like traps and whatnot, and exterminators, and the cats were kind of left floating around, and this kind old woman collected them and started looking after them, and now we have this kind of institution. It's not well known, actually, but it's there. Uh-huh. It's really strange.
Wow. Lee, are there some inspiring tips that you can give Sophia to get back to her writing, since she's, obviously there's some passion there for her in writing?
Well, Sophia, one of the things that I think you already do, which I believe is the number one ingredient to becoming a good writer, is to read a lot. So I love to read. I read tons of books. I read probably the same books you do, because I read mostly kids' books. And I love reading a great story, getting lost in a magical world. And I find, if anything, those stories really inspire me and help me keep going as a writer. So I think that's the number one thing. And then the number two thing is to always just keep writing and don't beat yourself up and say, like, oh, this isn't that good or whatnot. Because I can tell you, the books of mine that you read, I've put months and months and months of work into them. I never do something perfectly the first time, whether it's a drawing or a writing. It takes lots and lots of work. And I can tell you right now, the book I'm working on, Kendra Calistar 5, I've rewritten the first 6 chapters 4 completely different ways, just to try and get it right. So it's not something that happens easily. So you can't beat yourself up. You just got to keep trying.
Gosh, Lee, this has been a real pleasure. Tell our listening audience your website address.
You can find out all about my books at KendraCandlestar.com. That's Kendra with a K and Candlestar with a K. And you can also visit my personal website at LeeFoti.com.
All right. Well, gosh, thank you so much, Lee. This has been a real pleasure to talk to you. And you're such a prolific writer, and obviously the kids love your books. But, I also hear, and what you said, is that you read kids' books, so you understand what kids like to read.
Oh, definitely.
That's
all I read, as a matter of fact. It's almost a guilty pleasure when I get to read an adult book. And then I find that I'm often disappointed. So I find that writing for kids is challenging, and I think the standards are really high. And right now we have so many fantastic authors for children out there, and there's such a choice and range in books. So you just can't go wrong. There's something for everyone. And if you do like to write for children, then it's the number one thing you can do is read.
And I so agree with you, Lee, that the importance of reading. It really is. And thanks again for coming on line with us and talking about your most recent book, Kendra Kendall Star and the Crack in Kazan. And I know that your next book is going to be just as good. And then it'll be interesting to see what other series you start.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
Wide open.
And thank you so much, Sophia. It's been a real pleasure having you help me again.
Thank you, Sophia.
You're welcome.
And there you go, listeners. We just talked to Lee Edward Foti. He is the author of Kendra Kendall Star and the Crack in Kazan. And as you have heard, I've got Sophia McElroy here with me, helping me to talk to Lee. So if you have kids or grandkids or nephews, or nieces or neighbors that are in this age group of 8, 9, 10, do look into this book, because I think you'll find that they will really enjoy it. And this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.